Welcome back, man, to another great episode, man. As you always know, I have to give an introduction for our next comedian. He's some would call him Chocolate Daddy. You know, you might
that's actually crazy.
You might have seen him on OnlyFans or on his IG story trying to sell that body to make them ticket sales, whatever you gotta do to make it.
Whatever I gotta do, man. What
it do, man. But he's hilarious, he's a great guy, he's a great comic, man. I'm glad that we got him on the show here today. Please, everybody, give it up for my brother Mo Hill. Yes, man, yes. Cleveland / Columbus very own.
Yes, sir. You're
feeling that football fever, huh? You got that shirt on.
Man, today is the day, dog. Been waiting on this day for so long, bro.
Like, did you get any tickets for this season?
No. I actually don't like going to the stadium to watch the game. I actually like watching the game around like energy at the bar or like somewhere like a Browns bar or something like that where it's just lit. I'd rather do that than go to the actual games. I don't really be having fun at the game. You'd be stuck in a seat. And,
that makes sense. That makes sense.
To me.
I've never been to an NFL game before, but my dad would take me to a lot of Ohio State games, and that I'd rather just watch it at the crib. I mean, inside the shoe.
Especially in Ohio during the fall or the winter. I'm good.
Yeah, man. Are you a Cavs fan too, or are you just a Browns fan?
Yeah, I'm a Cleveland fan in general. I'm originally from Cleveland, so all the Cleveland sports is just in my blood, bro. I can't help but root for them, even if I didn't want to. So
if they got a WNBA team, you right there on court side.
Oh yeah, when they had one, I was right there. Yeah,
That's gonna be funny.
Hockey,
though.
All that. Yeah, hockey,
That's gonna be funny when you blow up and you, you see you court side on a women's basketball team.
Hey man, you know they doing it. People supporting it now. I mean, you know, I'll support it if they have one. Back when they had one, my mom used to get free tickets all the time. So when I was a kid, we used to go there. And then the Cleveland Lumberjacks, if you're original Cleveland OG, you know about the Lumberjacks from back in the day. And I used to go to those games too. So anything Cleveland, bro, I'm going to support.
Hey, I ain't going to lie. I'm going to be at them WNBA games. I'm trying to get me a girl. Like, for real.
I want a forward or a center. Just give me...
I was so like people thought I was weird. I always been attracted to Brittany Griner. She's so
funny. That is weird, bro. That's definitely weird, bro. You could have said Lisa Leslie or anybody else, bro. But Brittany Griner, come on, man. She's trying not to be attracted to me. You still found her attractive?
Her
purpose.
Now she give me like auntie vibes. Ever since she cut off her hair,
auntie.
Yeah,
the way like, she looked, it looked like her.
Yeah, I can't get down with it no more. But growing up, I did like I had a huge crush on Cheryl Swoops.
That's valid.
Yeah, when she came out gay, I was like, what?
I know you was mad. Like that was the part that I can't get.
I was pissed, man. But nah, man, I'm so excited, bro. We got you on here, man. I don't even consider you like a Columbus comic no more, bro. You be in them NY streets doing your thing, man. But I love it so much because, you know, you creating your own path and doing it, you know, your way. What made you, you know, say, you know, bump Columbus, I'm going to just go to NYC and get this work in?
It was a combination of things, honestly, bro. I feel like... You know, one, I feel like just the way that my path was and the opportunities that God blessed me with to be able to afford to go back and forth to New York is the first thing. And then the second thing is just like after I went there the first time, I'll be honest, what it was is I read Kevin Hart's book twice and I read it twice. And in his book, man, he just talked about how him going to New York made him stronger. And as I started to go to New York, it made sense. And at first I was like, I'm just going to go. You know, New York is the Mecca. And if you could afford to go and if you could try to make your way there, of course, that's the natural instinct is to go where the opportunities to get better are. And my whole goal in this comedy game is to be a great comic. I don't care about money right now. I don't care about funds. I don't be doing stuff for money. Honestly, it's a lot of times where I be losing money by going and doing certain gigs. But that's why I said God bless me with the opportunity to not have to rely on comedy money to make it. I haven't spent a dime that I've made off comedy money unless it was an investment in like a camera or maybe I had to, you know, wanted to not use my own money for a plane ticket. I would just use the money I made from comedy. But really, once I started going a little bit, I read Kevin Hart's book And it inspired me to go more than I was going. Because at first I'm like, I'll go every couple months or something like that. I'll go for a few days. But I read that book and I just started going as much as I possibly can. And, you know, it's just like you said, it's just, you know, I'm creating my own path to leave a trail. And, you know, it's been working for me in different aspects and just, you know, creating blessings for me, bro. So I just, and the more I go, the more I have a reason to go back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't see anything wrong with it, you know, if you live in another city and you're not too far away from a bigger scene.
Ride, bro. Yeah.
And I actually you've grown so much from it. So it's definitely paying off. That's for a fact.
I appreciate it.
And yeah, we don't even barely see you anymore. And I'm not mad about that. I'm like, no, man, nigga, I'm trying to go too.
Honestly, bro, like, I'm going to be honest, bro. I've always had this, like, ambitious, I see more for myself mentality. Not to say that I can't do anything in Columbus, but we got to call a spade a spade. You know, our scene is very small. It's very limited opportunities. And it's severely local. Local. And then it's local to the point where even the people that you rub elbows with at the show, they trying to crawl out just like you trying to crawl out. And a lot of times it takes for you to meet certain people to help you gravitate towards certain levels. And that's just the nature of the beast in this game. Everything is about networking. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's like, if you don't meet people who are either at a certain level to help pull you to that level, or people who know how to get to that level, it's hard to get to the next level, bro. That's just what it is. And unfortunately, you know, I was early in the scene when I first started in Columbus, I was like, I always saw more for myself in the aspect of like, all right, how can I grow and grow at a pace where I feel like it's not going to be, I'm 10 years in and I'm just now getting on Funny Bone stages, or I'm just now getting on mainstream shows, or I'm just now meeting this comic and that comic, because that's what we was really seeing. That's what we really see around us. If you really keep it real, man, I just saw more for myself personally. Everybody's path is different. So I'm not shitting on the scene or nothing like that, but I just saw more for myself, and I had the capability of, unfortunately, I don't care who you are in this scene, you got to leave the scene. You know, Jason Banks, I mean, he had a variable. He had followers that pulled him out of the scene. No one just came here and like got big here. This is not a big scene like a New York, a LA, a Houston, a Atlanta. Like, people in Atlanta, you could do comedy in Atlanta, never leave Atlanta, and still have a good comedy career. Same thing with New York. There's a lot of New York comics that never have to leave New York. They could just do the Cellar, New York Comedy Club, and all those clubs on the circuit regular and make a decent living. Mm-hmm. And we can't do that in Columbus, bro. It's just, that's just all it is. We got one major comedy club here. And then we got the Comedy Attic, which is newer. So it's like, prior to me going to New York, Comedy Attic didn't exist.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, it's growing and it's giving the opportunities to rub elbows with certain comics. But at the same time, at that time when I started making that decision, like, it just wasn't the same type of opportunity as going to New York, you know?
I think once I saw, I think it was Lucas first, then Shayna, and then I don't know in what order, but then I, you know, saw you, and I was just like, these guys are brave to leave and take a bet on themselves, mm-hmm. and I'm gonna do the same thing. I don't know exactly when. I mean, I got an idea when I want to leave, but I was like, if I want to become better, it can't be here. So let me not care too much about being booked or anything. Let me just focus on the writing. Let me just focus on being comfortable. And then all of the rest of that will take care of itself, because I know, like, my goal is to get out of here to get myself more opportunities, because it is limited, you know.
Yeah, you gotta leave, bro.
Those opportunities make you bigger, better, and get you to be more, you know, more seen. If you just stay here, it's like, oh, this all it is.
You'll be doing the same local shows with the same 10 people, the same 10 times in front of the same 17 people. Like, it's not, that's not growth, bro.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think I just got tired of hearing, like, I mean, I know, like, sometimes jokes take a while, but I was like, man, it's 2 years and I'm still hearing you tell the same joke. I was like, nah, that can't be me. I'm trying to come up with a new joke, like, all the time. Or at least you're going to be like, Ty is working on something. Like, he always working on something, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I see y'all three doing y'all's thing, it just keeps me motivated. And I guess, like, inspire me to let me know that you can get up out of here. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know,
the thing is, I'm still here, bro. That's
crazy. I know. But, like, you wouldn't know.
I don't live in New York. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they actually, like, picked up and left. No, I still physically live in Columbus, Ohio. But, like, I'm also, like, I tell people I'm part-time in New York. But I basically tell people I'm in New York. Like, I'm in New York because I got my own show there now. And, like, I go back so much that people be like, yo, you ain't moved here yet? Like, they think that I live there now. But, and I tell people I live in New York because I basically do, bro. Like, I'm that's the only other place I spend as much time as I spend at home outside of being on the road with other comics. So, honestly, bro, like, I'm still in Columbus. I'll always live in Columbus, though. I love being able to come back to Columbus. I wouldn't want to – I'm glad I'm not full-time in New York because there's just a certain cadence and a certain part, like, certain cultural ingrainments that I just really don't want to have being a New York comic, so to speak. But I still don't consider myself a New York comic. You know what I mean? I'm just coming up through the New York scene. So, but, no, I'm still here, bro. That's the only thing is, like, the only difference is I'm still in Columbus.
No, I like when I don't see you because I know that you're working. And I like that. And it reminds me, you better work too. I don't take it as like, I feel like some people take it as, I am a competitive person, but I'm only competitive when it comes to like a show that I care about because I know it's going to make the show better. So if you go before me and you do good, I'm like, all right, I got to do just as good or as better to make the show better. I don't want to be you don't want to be the first one to be like, you know what I'm saying? So when I don't see you, I'm like, okay, he's working. You got to keep working too. Yeah, I feel like I get inspired by people who do those type of things. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, step out on faith.
Yeah, absolutely, bro. You have to. I mean, that's the only way to look at it. You got to, I mean, me personally, and unfortunately, a lot of comics don't look at it this way. I look at it as a fraternity. You know, I don't act like I'm better than anybody. I don't feel like I am. My motto is, like, we all suck. Like, to keep it going, we all suck. Like, just keep it real, bro. I like keep it real myself. Like, and that keeps you humble and it keeps you understanding. Like, is somebody always funnier than you? And anybody could be funnier on any given night. That's my mentality. So it keeps me hungry. I'm a very hungry comic. But I'm also confident in myself, too, and my talent and my ability to be funny. And some of the things that I feel like separate me from a lot of comics at this stage in my career. But at the same time, I say that all the time, bro. I don't come back and feel like I'm bigger or better than anybody. I don't treat anybody any different. You know, I don't care how many followers I got. I still follow people back. I still respond to messages. I still hit people up. I don't care how many people, you know, people ask me to do things. I don't tell people no, like, I'm beneath this or above that. You still see me at open mics. I do shows in front of hundreds of people, some thousands of people some weekends. And I'm still at the Comedy Attic on a Wednesday because that's the only day I could go. I'm still here on a Wednesday like everybody else. You know, even before this point, you saw me on Mondays at What's the Name? You saw me on Tuesdays at What's the Name? I was hitting all the mics with everybody, bro. So I'm definitely paying my dues and I'm still paying my dues. So again, like, I look at it as, if you look at it that way, as far as you focus on getting better, you're going to get better and people are going to respect it more. Because when you do stuff for the money or you get money hungry, it shows. And you could tell those comics. And I usually just kind of distance myself from those comics because I feel like it'll fuck up my growth if I'm with you and the only thing you're doing is chasing a dollar, trying to sell high tickets and do things like that. Like, I don't care about that stuff. Yeah. I just want people to have a good time. I'm not going to be stupid and do stuff for free if I can help it. But at the same time, I'm trying to get good, bro. I'm trying to be a great comic. That money, all that shit's going to come, bro. Everything is going to come. If you put comedy first and you put getting good first and you get good at, you know, being funny, like, be funny first before people want to, I want to get on TV. I want to write that. Be funny first.
Yeah. I think hearing people complain so much about not getting paid here, it made me be like, you don't really want this. Like,
even if you was, bro, you don't, bro, New York comics, bro, listen, this was crazy. You don't understand how the big pond works until you work in the big pond. Some of these bigger upper echelon headlining comics that come in and out of Columbus making thousands, I'm talking thousands of dollars. Your biggest headliners come to Columbus, make thousands of dollars. You think they're making that every spot they do in New York? They live in New York.
Right.
I'm here to tell you, no. They get paid more than everybody else on the lineup, but them shows are indie shows and they're selling $20 a ticket and sold out at 60 people. They're not getting a grand, fam. Mm-hmm. They might get 50 to 100 bucks for that spot, but they're doing all those spots. And that's why they come to your city and be so good at being headliner, because they get to work on their shit all the time. Yeah, it adds up, but they're not getting that bread that they're getting when they go to the Funny Bone or they go to the Improv. It's just not possible. It's not financially possible. So with that being said, like, the fact that people outside of that pond are so worried about getting money, even if you was getting money, the money that you will be getting during the week ain't going to be nothing for you to sustain on at this stage anyway.
Yeah.
period, bro.
So I'll be telling, like, when people be talking, I'll just be like, y'all do realize we in Columbus. Like, nobody's checking.
That's the other caveat, too, is, like, how much are you really going to get paid doing indie shows in Columbus? Like, how often is it? So, you know, there's only a few shows that's actually doing well in the city on a consistent basis, but those ain't all Columbus comics. So it's like, what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying?
One thing you posted that I loved, because we had talked about this previously, you were actually hanging out with your favorite comic, Tony Roberts, and y'all was hanging out, having some. I was like, oh, this boy out here living the dream, like his childhood hero, and he's sitting here having breakfast. And I was happy. I saw that. I was like, this is what it's about.
Man.
That's my question, my fault. How has that relationship made you a better comic? And now, like, you got your childhood hero's number. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
crazy. Yeah, that's crazy to think about if you put it that way. Honestly, what I will say is it was very organic. I'm not going to lie. I don't get starstruck, but Tony's been my favorite comedian since I was 9 years old, bro. And when I first met him, I was genuinely starstruck. Like, I couldn't believe it, bro. This is the dude that made me laugh the hardest. And that's why he's been my favorite since I was a kid. Like, I literally remember sitting. I actually just had this conversation with him the last time I was with him. And I was like, bro, I was like, you should do the joke about the birds eating off your heels when people have ashy feet. He's like, oh, I forgot about that joke, bro. He did that joke on Def Comedy Jam. He did that joke on Comic View, bro. Mm-hmm. I was 9 years old. I remember this. I don't know. I think I was 9 or 10 years old. Regardless, I used to stay up late and watch Comic View. I was a comedy buff before I ever thought of comedy. I always loved comedy. I remember watching the Madeas when they was on DVD, bro, the original play. So I've always been a big fan of comedy. But when it comes to Tony, bro, he was my LeBron James of comedy before I ever met him. And then when I met him, he was just such a cool, down-to-earth dude. He's not like a lot of these bigger comics. And he's big in our world, bro. He's a fucking legend in our world. He's on the Mount Rushmore for a lot of people, including me. Bigger comics that we see making gazillion dollars a year is like, we don't want to follow Tony. Like, this has been broadcasted and said out loud amongst the greatest of great comics in our industry. Mm-hmm. Even when he's on big cards, he's the headliner. So that lets you know how big this dude is. And so, you know, when I first met him, it was very organic. He was the first person to put me on a Funny Bone stage 3 years ago. Then a year later, Dustin let me host with him and Lance Woods for 5 shows. And during that 5 shows, I didn't hang out with them that as much, but I hung out with them a little bit. And I hung out with them, and they went to church with me. We went to lunch. But then we was just hanging out in the green room. They helped me out with a couple jokes, and we were just kind of shooting shit. But me and Tony and Lance and I, we all kind of clicked. You know what I mean? It was just like a genuine, like, the way that we banter and talk shit and everything and just our sense of humor. It all just, like, clicked. And then, honestly, it was this last time. And I don't want to pretend like I'm, like, me and Tony are, like, close. We're not. We're definitely growing a relationship personally. But it wasn't until this last time that I just hosted for him a few weeks where I was like, okay, like, me and Tony are, I would say we're super cool. We're super cool because me and him, it was just me and him. And we got a lot of one-on-one time outside of the comedy club. You know, we went to lunch. We hung out with my daughter. Went to the mall. We went shopping. And that whole time, me and him just cracking jokes, talking shit, having personal conversations. He giving me advice about things. And it was just like a genuine, like, we just clicked, bro. Even though he's so much older than me, and he's so much older than Lance, too, and Lance has been touring with him for the last few years, we just clicked, bro, and we just had such a great time outside of the shows, and it helped that I did well. It helped that I was killing at my hosting spot because Keith Bender was featuring, and it helped that I was funny, but also helped that me and him clicked the way that we did. But then me being a hungry comic, I just asked him. I was like, hey, you know, he gave me some minor cosigns during the weekend that gave me a little bit of comfortability to ask him, like, hey, can I go on a road with you? And I asked him for one date at a time, and he was like, yeah. And he said, yeah. So I was like, yo, this is crazy. So we're in Kansas City this weekend. And I'm just taking one weekend at a time, gonna get ahead of myself and be like, yeah, I'm touring with Tony. You know, and granted, he has, like, he's not on tour or anything, and he has shows in like these big headline shows or headliners in between stuff. And so do I. Like, I have shows and shit in between going to New York and stuff like that. But I think, you know, I got his blessing, and then he put me on with the Kansas City Improv, and I'm going to be actually staying there for two extra shows after I'm done doing his four shows. So it's like that right there is how a lot of comics become good, is being on the road. And I can just tell just by the cadence when I'm doing four, five, or six shows, by the time that third show will roll around, your confidence is so crazy. And then like the jokes you've been doing just feel bigger, and you add stuff and you feel comfortable taking risks, and all these other things happen. And then on top of that, you built the relationship, dude. Like, he's the biggest of the biggest in our world. And to hear him tell stories when he started Def Comedy Jam and when he was on Comic View, and just hearing the people he's friends with and things like that, and the different stories and that, like, just being around him, it automatically puts you in a room with people that you, some people take years to meet or be comfortable around. You know what I mean? If somebody is with you and you're like, oh, yeah, open for Tony, that lets a lot of people guard down. They'd be like, oh, I got a show. You want to come? You know what I mean? Just stuff like that. So it's been dope. It's been dope. And I'm honestly, like I said, I'm just taking it one weekend at a time. Like, I'm not going to pretend like I'm on tour with Tony, but he definitely gave me a blessing to start doing shows with them. So we'll see what happens with that, man. I'm not going to get too ahead of myself and just assume, because, you know, he does tour with Lance, and I'm just thankful that he even gave me that opportunity. So I'm hopefully I can just open for them, or just, you know, when Lance can't make it, I'll feature for him at that time too.
But you also went on tour with Darren, what's his last name? Fleet.
Aaron Fleet. Yeah.
How was that experience?
It was dope. It was my first tour. You know, appreciative of him for bringing me on tour. It was a cool experience. I mean, obviously he's not at the level of like a Tony Roberts, but the level that he's at, man, dude is a very, very strong headliner, man. He's super funny, like organically funny. And he just, like, you know, he gave me an opportunity to get exposure and to also learn how to be on the road, get used to that lifestyle, hotel to hotel, driving from show to show. And he sells out. And then honestly, being with him gave me the experience of being in certain markets that I was terrified of, where you would hear stories about, man, St. Louis market is hard, Indianapolis is hard, or you're going to die. Like, you hear certain things, and then you get there, and that's where you got to trust your talent. And that's where I trusted, you know, the things that I've been working on for so long. And now it's not as much of a scare when you get in front of certain crowds. But it was dope, bro. It was super dope. I think we did, I want to say we did about eight or nine shows, maybe 10 shows together. I can't remember. We did quite a bit of shows. So it was dope. It was super dope.
Which show would you say, or city would you say, made you better from that tour? You was like, I learned Aaron's a lot board. Here. Yeah.
St. Louis and Indianapolis. St. Louis, I'm gonna be honest, man. You hear rumblings. St. Louis is a hard market, you know. And then he brings out the black folks. Like, his crowds are predominantly black. There's white people in there, but they're predominantly black. And, you know, St. Louis is just St. Louis, bro. It's just like the hood, hottest of the hood. Like, you know, you got a little bit of everything in St. Louis. But the thing about St. Louis, so St. Louis proved to me that I can stand in front of these crowds that are tough. Because they're not easy, and I won't say that they're easy. And even after the show, people will come up like, you did, you killed, and we are not easy. Like, they know they're not easy. That's what's crazy. Mm-hmm. And so being in front of a crowd like that, and they're happy hecklers, but they hood happy hecklers. Like, they in on the joke with you, saying the most or whatever, but like, it could turn on you quick because you got everybody, you got multiple happy hecklers in on the joke, making comments, this and that. But if you do or say anything is disagreeable, it also flip to where niggas is talking shit to you. You know what I'm saying? But the one thing that I proved to myself was I did 15 minutes, and I don't normally like to say that I killed or murdered, because when you watch somebody like Tony Roberts or Earthquake, niggas, you're not killing. You're not flipping the room upside down. I did extremely well. I crushed. He says crushed. Crushed is different from killed. I did 15 minutes with no material, and I killed. Mm-hmm. I crushed. 15 minutes and no material. I crushed the whole time doing all crowd work. And it was like big laughs, like big, big, big laughs. And that proved to me, like, being organic with these crowds are what works for me, because the crowd work is like kind of my thing. You know what I mean? It's like what I like to do. I love hosting because I love being able to just use that part of my brain that's just so natural to me. So I crushed. But my favorite show was the Indianapolis show, because they had the same energy as St. Louis, but they were less rowdy and they listened. So I was able to actually do the material that I worked on. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the biggest laugh to date that I've ever gotten in a comedy show when I did my last joke. And the joke was so big, like like in the back, it was like we felt the room shaking, like it was rumbling in the back. It was like probably 250, 300 some people in there. And I had people, you know, black people when they laugh. Like if you, and I got the video, like you see people literally standing up, like clapping, like falling out, doing like the shit, like the whole crowd was going crazy when I ended my last joke. So I would say Indianapolis was my biggest laugh and like the moment where I was like, I got something going. I got mm-hmm. a solid 15, 20 minutes now that I've been trying to work on. St. Louis just let me know I can stand in front of these people and survive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. How was doing the Comedy Store for the first time? Was that your first time?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
How was that experience? I've never done a show there, but yeah, me and Shayna and Lucas went live this year when I went up to LA mm-hmm. this year. So when I see you was there, I was like, oh, that's good news. How was that experience?
It wasn't a good experience, but it was also a good experience. It was actually a bad experience, but not because of the venue or anything like that. It was a good experience because I got to get on a stage in front of all these LA comics. I was on a legendary stage. Like that's just to perform there was crazy. Just being in front of certain people and then building certain relationships while I was there. That part was dope. The part that sucked was when I got on stage, I didn't do well because I rushed my set. And the only reason I rushed my set is because I had to cut my LA trip short to be back to open for Tony. So I picked the first flight out of LA, which was at like, I want to say 1:15 a.m. But the show in LA, it was supposed to start at 10:30, but it didn't start till 11, like 11:15. And I went up to go and she was like, oh, I got you after this person, this person, and this person. So I'm looking at the clock and then I'm also timing. So the host of the show, and what I'm saying is not a bad thing. Everyone will agree with me. The host of the show is comedian CP, who is a fucking dog. He is hilarious. But also this nigga will do a whole special in between comics. Like he will do, you don't know if he's gonna do 5 minutes or do 55 minutes. Like this nigga really does. And you know, people just let CP do CP because CP will put his time in. He paid his dues. Everybody likes when he hosts a show. He is funny as fuck. But you can't, if you got something to do, you ain't doing it because CP, you don't know what CP is going to do between people. So I'm calculating the time that I'm going to go up. And then I'm trying to calculate what CP is going to do in between. And then I'm looking at the clock, like I have to hard stop, leave because I had a rental car. So I still had to drive to LAX, which was 30 minutes away, drop my car off, then take the shuttle to the airport and then go through the airport and get to my gate. So it's like I got to compensate. So I'm in my head already. I'm calculating time. I'm more worried about fucking getting out of there than my jokes. Like I'm like pressed. And so by the time I get up there, my hard stop, I had to leave, was midnight or 12:15. I didn't get on stage till like 12:05. And then after I got off stage, I had 7 minutes. So I didn't do well because I literally had no tone, no energy. I was just literally rushing through my jokes. I was just mm-hmm. trying to get on the stage and get off the stage. And honestly, forgot some parts of my setups and my punches just because I was rushing. Like I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. Because I was like, if I miss this flight, I'm not going to be able to perform the whole weekend. So yeah. I was panicked. So I was panicking on stage the whole time. And then when I got out, I still had to go Uber to my car, which I left at Laugh Factory, which is like a mile away.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to Uber to my car, drive from there to fucking the airport. So I'm literally doing 90 to the airport, which is like all stoplights. And then I get there, the bus takes forever. Like I literally had to sprint to my gate. The plane started boarding at 1:15. I didn't get to my gate till 1:25. No, I lied. My plane started boarding at 1 a.m. I didn't get to my gate till 1:25. And I got lucky because it was a last minute people that was trying to get on that flight and it was holding up the gate a little bit. So I didn't get there till 1:25, bro. And there was a whole story with that once I got to the airport because LAX is under construction. So you had to go in and out of the fucking terminal to get to the other terminal. Then it was late. So when it's late at LAX, they shut down certain security points. So to go to one security point, you got to go to one place to go in, but then go back to where you're playing. So it was just a whole debacle, bro. So it was a good time I got on stage, but it was a horrible experience because I didn't necessarily get to enjoy it. So
yeah, no, I get that. I get that. I've been through LAX before.
Bro, it's a beat, bro. And then it was like dead stop traffic. The bus dude had to like do a detour to get me off the bus, bro. And it was crazy, bro. It was so crazy.
Nah, I understand, man. Nah, you're making waves, making your name out there. How does it feel to be like living your dream? I mean, we're not all the way there yet because we're not full time, but we're close to getting there. How does it feel to be like living out your dream?
I feel like the bigger I get, the harder I gotta work. I'm not comfortable. It feels great because it's what I love to do, but it's also stressful because you gotta continue. For me, at least, I put the pressure on myself to continue to be funny and continue to keep going. And I think for me, like, it's one of those things where it's amazing and it's a blessing, but I don't really, until I'm at a pinnacle of like I'm touring with somebody or I have some consistency where I'm able to like get, like I get jealous of some of these comics who like, man, some of these dudes, they get on tour with these big comics like early. And you could tell that they get good fast because you're in front of these real crowds every single night. Yeah. And I know how that feels, bro. It's a drug and it releases endorphins. When you get in front of a sold out Funny Bone crowd and you know what jokes work, and in the middle of those jokes, you get to try something that you think is fire and still have a good set. Or if it goes flat, you can go back and do it again because you got another show at 9:30. So you can find another way to make it funny, or you or the comedian in the back is like, you should do this or do that. You know, that is what's dope to me. And then watching your set back in front of a real crowd is nothing like it, bro. So it's dope from that standpoint, just like being able to hit the road and being around some of your favorite people. But I put pressure on myself. It's like the bigger I get, the further I got to fall, so the harder I got to work.
I actually experienced that for the first time when I did. It was my first time doing a weekend where I had consistent shows, where I did Don't Tell. I think I had like 4 shows that weekend. And I was like, oh, nigga, you working. Like, okay, we're going to take this joke out. This joke don't work. We're going to try this one for the second one. I was like, oh, this is fun. I really.
That's what it feel like, bro. Yeah.
I really fuck with that. I actually want to thank you because you put me on your show this year in January. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I told, from my standards, I felt like I fucking bombed. I felt like I bombed. Okay, I know a couple people was like, that first one, don't do that again.
You definitely didn't do well, but
I freaking bombed.
There was reasons why. It wasn't because it wasn't funny. I think it was just the experience aspect of being in this game and certain things you have to go through to learn from them. I think that's all it was.
But
I know you're funny, but I just think you had some, yeah, you had a couple moments that you probably could have took out.
The reason why I'm thanking you for that is because it made me a better comic. So usually, like, if I'm in front of a black crowd, I really want to do well, and I didn't do well. And Netfat gave me some advice. He was just like, just talk more about you. And I was like, I don't like that. You know what I'm saying? But he was like, nah, usually, like, what I find that I don't want to do, that's what I need to do. And ever since then, I've been writing more jokes about me, and I have found more success. So I thank you for letting me be on your show and bombing to make me a better comic. so I can realize where to put certain jokes at, what jokes to say. And it really has made me a better comic for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we all got to go through those. Man, listen, we got to all go through those moments in order for us to realize that. Had the same thing happen to me when I did. I was actually just talking to B-Titty about this. I did a show with B-Titty and TK Kirkland and Cleon, the comedian. It was in Cleveland. It was a hood ass crowd. And this was the first time I was in front of like a real black hood crowd. And I just went up there thinking I could, you know, do some of my like softball crowd work stuff that I normally do in front of mixed crowds. And I lost them early. And I was supposed to do, I was supposed to do 15 minutes. This nigga lit me like 8. He knew I was up there dying, bro. And I'm not going to lie. I was up there. I was straight up bombing, bro. Like let me take that back. I wasn't doing well at all. I got laughs because I went to some stuff that worked, but I panicked and went to the stuff that worked that I was going to save for later. And my confidence wasn't there. Like, once I saw niggas was like, you know, shuffling in their seat, I was like, oh, okay, I lost them. And that's when my confidence dropped. And I was like, all right, let me get out of here. But I mean, TK's crowds are notoriously hard, but I was definitely like, let me get the fuck up out of here, bro. So he let me early. But I was able to redeem myself with the same promoter. Because he put me on the show with What's his name? Oh, Richie Fontaine. Not Richie Fontaine, but yeah, Richie Fontaine. He put me on a show with him. He put me on a show with him and I killed. Like I did 20 something minutes and I was like, I'm not fucking, I did all different jokes, like all jokes that I haven't done in a while, and like jokes in front of that crowd, like that would work. So yeah, I got a lot of good jokes out of that too. So yeah, it's a learning experience, but we all got to go through it in order to get better, you know?
Oh no, I was pissed. Like, I was pissed the next day. I was like, and somebody I went to high school with was there, and I was like, oh, hell no, nah, man. I'm about to.
Bro, I felt the same way at that show, bro. My family was, I had a whole row of family at that show, and yeah. I bombed. And when I tell you, I didn't make eye contact with nobody. I was trying to get the fuck up out of there, bro. I was so mad. I took a picture with TK, though, because he's a legend. But besides that, bro, I was like, nah, I'm good. I had to get up out of there. But when I watched it back, I saw where I went wrong. I 100% saw it. And then the next show that I did with that promoter, I killed. And then the last show I just did with him, I killed. So it was like, it was all a learning experience. And all them crowds that I do with this promoter are Black, like more, you know, urban crowds. You know what I'm saying? And so that proved to me I can do any crowd. Because in New York, I'd be in a room full of white people. And I'd be in a room full of Black people. That's the only thing that I love about my path so far is my crossover. You know what I'm saying? I've done the hood crowds. I could do the Black crowds. Most of Tony crowds are Black. So I could do that crowd. But then I'll do a show with like Chris Porter or fucking, I got a show with this dude named Matt Matthews. But just the white comics that I've been around, Nimesh, Chris Porter, some of the comics I do shows in New York. Like I'll do a show in fucking Lower Manhattan and then do an all Black show in Harlem. Like my crossover is getting more strong and knowing what to do and how to make things more mainstream. So yeah, man,
The funniest thing I said on that show when I did your show was, "Fuck y'all, I know I'm funny." And I had balls to say that because that set was terrible. But since then, I've been writing differently, and I would say that I am more. I have crossover, like no matter what joke I do, they can work in either room. And I'm proud to say that because I felt like I was just staring towards, okay, this is a white crowd. I got my white jokes. This is a Black crowd. I got my Black jokes. And that's only going to take you so far.
I'm not going to lie. I still do it because I'm just not at the level where my crossover game is just so mainstream. Like, this is a part of getting to that point. Like,
yeah.
I got my whole list of jokes that I know will work in both crowds. And I got my list of jokes that I know is only for Black crowds and only for white crowds. Like, you know what I mean? And unfortunately, that's the thing is being Black comics, we kind of have to do that a little bit. You know what I mean? And certain things we have to dumb down for white people. And then certain things in Black crowds, they'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. But all in all, like you said, the one thing that I felt lucky to learn early is all my jokes, even early, if you watch my first open mics, I always talked about me. I always talked about my daughter. I always talked about like my family or stuff that I, like me stuff. I never was like talk about the aliens. And I just wrote like a current events joke for the first time recently. But other than that, like, I don't really be doing that. I just talk about me and my experiences and just, you know, different things.
Yeah. Nah, I again, thank you.
At least you look at it that way. Some niggas be mad, like, man, these niggas set me up. Like, nah.
Yeah, man. I just take it as a learning curve. That shift. And I'm glad it came in January. It came in January. Now I'm booked every month. Something's working, bro. Something is working.
Good, bro. And I could tell you, bro, I've been noticing your growth and just like you leaning into your style and your demeanor and leaning into like your cadence of how you are as a person and how you talk and just like your rhythm of just being like a slower comic. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get potent that way when you start writing strong, cause you know, you got to lead up and people will be like, all right, man, we get, you know what I mean? But like, the thing is like, I learned it. Like, Ali is a slower comic cause he tells stories. There's a lot of lead up to when he gets to his points and punchlines, but he's so strong. But the thing that I got into a conversation with Ali, and hopefully this is, you know, this works for me too, but for you, it's a very good tidbit. But just because of your style and just how you cadence, I ran into him. It's so funny how I be like, God really be blessing me with opportunity to talk to people, because I saw him at the Funny Bomb one weekend And sometimes I would go to the Funny Bone. You know, you stand in that hallway before they go onto stage, and he walked past. You know, Ali don't really look like the most approachable person. Like, he don't really have a come talk to me face. You know what I'm saying? Nigga look like he could shank you at any moment. Like, he just got that do not fuck with me face. You know what I'm saying? And he was walking past, and I was like, hey, how's it going, Ali? What's up, man? And he kind of looked at me like, oh, what's up, man? Like, you know, I was like, I'm a comic. I'm like, how you doing? He's like, oh, okay, yeah, nice to meet you. And he just kind of went about his business. And so I'm getting off the plane from New York in Charlotte. He was in Charlotte, or was I on my way somewhere? Yeah, I think I was getting off the plane, and he was getting ready to go back to Houston, and he was on the phone in the terminal. And I was like, hey, what's up, man? You remember me? He was like, yeah, I remember you, swole ass nigga. Like, so that's the thing about looking the way I do. People remember me because of my build. So he was like, yeah, I remember you. You was in the hallway. You know what I'm saying? And we talked we probably talked for about 30 minutes. What's funny was the whole time we was talking, this nigga was on the phone with somebody, and mm-hmm. they was just sitting there while we was talking the whole time. Like, whoever that is, love you, bro. 35 minutes, you've been on the phone and they said a word. Me and him talked for a minute, and one of the things that stuck out to me the most, and he said this, he said, when you're not being funny, be interesting. Mm-hmm. When you're not being funny, be interesting. And I think that's what slower comics, they're interesting. Slower, strong comics are interesting when they're not being funny. Dave Chappelle, he's not like a Tony Robbins or Earthquake. He don't like light him up, punch him like that. He's funny, but it's like but he's interesting though. He's very interesting when he talks. Ali Siddiq, same thing. When he's telling a story, he pulls you in just the way he tells the story. Like, you want to know what's about to happen because you know something funny is about to happen. So I would say that's some advice Ali gave me. And I started doing that, even though I'm trying to get quicker with my setup and my punches and stuff like that. When I'm not doing that, I try to be interesting. So
yeah,
that's a good thing that he taught me that I've been keeping in my mind when I write jokes.
Bing bong.
I will also say, I would say people that are not slower, sometimes they might be scared of the silence. I am not scared of the silence.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. When you don't got control of the room and it's quiet, you be like, all right, what's going on? Like, I'm not either. I was watching, who was it? Dion Cole, he said something. He was like, sometimes I'll be silent on purpose just to see how control of the room I got.
Yeah. That's the fun part.
Like, that's gangster. he was like, I'll purposely like not say nothing for a minute just to see like how, because if I'm quiet and they don't say nothing, then that means I got them. Yeah. That means that they're paying attention. But if I'm quiet and they shuffling, chit-chatting, I don't got, you know, you ain't got control of the room. So he said I'll do that. I was like, yo, that's hard.
I am working. I know I'm a great, I'm not great. I feel like I'm a solid dude. So I am working on being more open to talking to people, because you know I'd be real quiet, but that's just me in general. But then too, like, I think just seeing how this scene is, it'd be making me not want to fuck with nobody. You know what I'm saying? I'd be like, but I'm working on it. I'm getting better at it. I'm gaining more relationships with people and everything, because relationships do matter. That network do matter. And yeah, you know, sometimes people don't get booked because they don't know who you are.
No, facts. That's that too. And I think that's the other thing that's worked for me, is my ability to be personable, aside from being in the rooms that you need to be in. Being in New York, I think that also separates me, or even just going to LA and like all the people that I met while I was out there, just in that short amount of time. But I think the biggest thing is I've put myself in a position to get connected with people who are very connected. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm getting connected with people who kind of connected and we both trying to figure it out. I've gotten lucky enough to where my personality and just me being genuine and some of the people that I've been able to meet have put me in rooms with other people. And then what's dope is I've made impressions on people that talk about me when I'm not in the room. And there's been so many times that other people that live in New York that I've never met was like, yo, I was talking to so-and-so and, you know, are you available for this show or that show? They said you're really fun. Like, that's happened to me multiple times in New York City, bro, in New York, all these comics. But aside from me being funny, niggas like, oh, you, I'm a cool dude. Like, I'm an introverted extrovert. So I'm not too much. I'm not a social butterfly, but I'm personable and I'm funny as a person. So people remember me. And obviously, you know, I'm aware of how I look. So people remember me from that standpoint too. So it's like, I just know how to utilize my resources and the things I have access to. And I think that is, bro, you can't be, it's hard to network and grow in this business if you're too quiet. If you don't already have a following, or you don't already have the vouchers, or you know, you ain't on tour with somebody, it's going to be tough to do that if you don't find a way to network in some capacity. Not to say you got to go kiss everybody's ass or be the dude that's like, yo, I'm trying to link. Like, nah, if somebody famous don't give me energy, or if somebody that I'm around not giving me like personable, I want to be talked to energy, I'm hands off, bro. There's been multiple comedians that I met that I'm like, yo, this dude is he's a good, great comedian, he's top notch headliner, but they give you that like, nigga, who are you energy? And I'm just like, oh, I'm good. Where somebody like a Tony Roberts, man, dude is just a personable, like bubbly guy. So it's like, you know, me and him clicking, it's like, okay, this is cool. I feel comfortable asking him for certain things. I don't ask him for like nothing crazy, but just like, hey, can I perform? Or hey, I'm an open, and he knows who I am. So it's like who I am. So it's like, it makes it easier. So, and then that's the other thing about going to New York is you see people on the scene so much. When they do come to the Funny Bone, they fuck with you. They'll tell you to pull up, or they'll tell you to come to the show, or they tell you this and that and the third. So it's like, you know, you get the opportunity to meet people so many different ways. You just got to utilize your resources when you can, you know?
Yeah. Y'all going to get to see more of the real me. I'm still quiet, but y'all going to get to see more of the real me. But this podcast has been helping me network.
Yeah, that's good.
Which I'm grateful for. But I know we gotta start wrapping things up here. Who's on your Mount Rushmore of comedy?
My Mount Rushmore comedy. Tony Roberts, Richard Pryor. David Arnold. How many on Mount Rushmore? Is it five or four?
Four.
Tony Roberts, Richard Pryor, David Arnold. This last one is controversial or tough. It's like three or four names that's like in my head that like I'm a huge fan of, that like I study these cats, man. But I always base it off who makes me laugh the most, you know what I mean? I'm gonna say, man, I don't want to put him there. A part of me wants to say Kevin Hart just because of the blueprint that he's taken. Mm-hmm. Not on purpose. Well, it's on purpose now, but he started out as a comic, kind of was like pushed into the acting thing, whereas like I have that skill set now, and I feel like I could definitely, that's something like my brain already works into, like, this is the, I'll take either path that takes me right now. Like, I feel like I have that talent, being an improv for 8 years before I started stand-up, and technically I've been doing comedy for well over 10 years. So it's like he has that blueprint from that standpoint. So if we're saying from that standpoint, you know, I would say I'll throw Kevin up there, even though there's like other names and I'm like, but I'll throw Kevin up there just because of the impact that he's made outside of comedy in the world of entertainment.
God dang, man. No women.
You done lost your damn mind. When you get your damn mind, you call
me. They close five. I do have some favorite female comics though. Like they didn't make them. You said my Rushmore, you ain't say my top 10. Like
they on the back end.
I got some of my favorite. Yeah, I got favorite female comics, bro. I got some comics, even like not even mainstream comics that I like.
Yeah, yeah. One of my faves for the women is this. I don't think she goes by a last name, but her name is Dominique.
I never heard of her.
Oh man, fucking! I keep forgetting this kid is here. Freaking hilarious, bro. Hilarious.
Yeah, it's a few. Comics, just Niche, boy, she is so fucking funny. Niche is funny.
Have you seen Yamanika? I like Yamanika.
I have. Yamanika's funny.
I like Yamanika.
Yamanika's funny. I love some more. Oh my god. Monique is obviously funny. Who else? I said the one lady from Comic View back in the day, the older lady. Dang, she was on Queens of Comedy. She used to wear the wig.
I know you're talking about. She was on Martin.
Yeah, she was on Martin, and then what's her name? I'm just going blank on names. She's an OG, short hair.
Adele?
Nah, not Adele.
I do love Adele though.
Adele is hilarious.
I love Adele. She was like the second. She was up there with Martin, hosting that Def Comedy Jam.
Hilarious, bro.
She was up there. up there.
Man, so many. It's so many I can't even name right now. Like, it's just
too many of them. Too many vaginas out there.
Yeah, I know. Mostly it is like the, you know, when, yeah, as far as female comics. Yeah.
Mo, what words of encouragement or motivation do you have for any comedians listening to this right now?
Keep going.
Message.
Keep going, bro. I can give you 1,000 words. I can tell you all these tidbits that I've learned thus far that I, you know, that I take with me. But the biggest thing that I've seen in this game for anybody who is famous, making it, headlining, whatever, is they didn't quit. Keep fucking going. Every time I get in these modes of like, what the fuck am I doing? It's time to third. Don't quit. Just don't quit, bro. Because you're going to, if you do it enough, you're going to get better, bro. And you have, that's the thing though. You cannot quit and be sitting around and not getting on stage. Take the reps and always be humble enough to get on stage, no matter what, bro. But you got to keep going, dog. Just keep going. And then challenge yourself. Challenge yourself to write more, challenge yourself to be more creative, or challenge yourself to add things and whatever your cadence might be. But the biggest thing is keep going.
Mo, tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
Man, this is a great podcast to, like, you know, especially if you're an up-and-coming comic or a person who loves comedy, you get to hear these stories before the world hears these stories. And I think that makes you feel more exclusive. You know, Ty definitely asks a lot of good questions about the journey, which is the biggest thing. I love listening to podcasts, bigger comics, when they talk about their journey, because a lot of us just want to know that we're going the right way. They might say something that you're going through. They might say something that you've seen or that you did, and it makes you feel a part of it, but it also makes you feel like, oh, okay, I'm headed in the right direction. So it gives you a lot of help and a lot of direction, and it gives you a lot of camaraderie with feeling like you're a part of something. And more importantly, man, it's just something that's good for the culture. It's always good for us to be able to talk outside of being on stage and really show our personalities, because sometimes how we are on stage, people misconstrue how we are off stage. And I think it's a good opportunity for us to, like, you know, keep our name fresh and keep people help people understand, like, who we are.
Mo, tell people where they can find you at.
You can find me on Instagram at Mo_funny with 3 Y's. You can find me on TikTok at Mo_funny. You can find me on YouTube at Mo Hill Comedy. You can find me on OnlyFans at but yeah, you can find me at those 3 social medias, man.
And if you want to watch next week's episode, be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel at TYE Comedy. We drop every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Subscribe, not subscribe, but go ahead and give us a follow on IG, a Comedians in Bed podcast, man. We want to thank Mo for taking the time out to be with us here today. He's a very busy guy. And Mo, before you go, man, how's the white women out there in New York?
That's a wild question. That's just a wild question. There's so many black women in New York. Just women, period. That's crazy. They're great. They're doing great. doing pretty good. I don't think I can tell you. I can't complain, man.
That question I specifically wrote down. I was like, write that
that's
one.
That's funny.
But no, man, we love you, man. We appreciate you coming on the show, man. Follow Mo on everything social too. We got some great skits. I suck we didn't get into it, but yeah, if you watch him, you'll know how funny he is. Check him out for sure. Mo, man, we appreciate you coming on, man. Really do.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you, man. And keep going, bro. Keep grinding. I love what you're doing, dog.
Appreciate you, man. We see you guys next week.